We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Knicks Film School pregame show. My name is Andrew Claudio, a.k.a. GMAC, and it's time to preview another matchup between the New York Knicks, or another game, I should say, just another Knicks matchup. This one against the San Antonio Spurs. The Knicks head over to the Lone Star State and head to San Antonio. The Alamo, I believe, is what it's called. We'll see when I get a San Antonio expert out in a second if I said anything ignorant from a New Yorker perspective. But it's hopefully going to be a matchup that the Knicks can take care of business. They're 26-2 this year against teams under 500. Knicks fans, or I guess Knicks Film School fans, will understand the stakes that are at play. John Macri predicted 2-2 in his standings predictions this week, that the Knicks would go 2-2 this week. So they kind of have to lose this game for him to have a chance to win. We'll see what happens in this matchup against Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs. Don't let that 17-56 record deceive you. Don't even let the fact that they have the worst record in the West and like a bottom five net rating and a bottom five offense. They every now and then will show up very competitive a lot of games, especially with this phenom. And joining me to talk about this matchup that maybe the Knicks should be a little bit afraid of, he is Matthew Tynan from the corporate knowledge newsletter on Substack. We love to support people on Substack here at Knicks Film School. Over at that newsletter, you can find the Small Market Bias podcast. And obviously, he covers the Spurs over in San Antonio. Matthew, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man. I look forward to speaking about this. It should be a fun one.
So first things first, it's like the Alamo. I nailed it, right? There's a Riverwalk. It's like there's a mall on it and everything. Did I nail all of that?
Yeah, the Riverwalk is a big tourist attraction. Okay. The Alamo is a fort that used to be a mission, and it's right in the middle of downtown. It's another big tourist attraction. So yeah. I mean, you pretty much got it about right there.
So full behind the scenes here. Mm-hmm. So a little bit about me. My dad's a pastor, and every 2 years, his denomination has like a convention called General Assembly. Mm-hmm. And growing up, every 2 years, it was always held in like a big, somewhat big city in the Midwest or in Texas. And one of the places, or honestly, there were two times that it was held in the Alamo Dome. And like the last time I was in the actual, I mean, there's a lot of churchgoers in this country, I'm sure you can imagine. Oh, yeah. But in that sense, they had the convention in the Alamo Dome.
Wow.
And the second time I went, I was like a big basketball fan at the time. I was 16. And I was like, this is great. The Spurs don't play here anymore. I kind of like to go see, at that time was the SBC Center.
Yeah.
And it actually worked out. This is way too behind the scenes now. My brother was 4 at the time. And it turned out when we went to just go see where the building was, there was like an event going on. And he was going through his Wiggles stage. I don't know if you're aware of who the Wiggles are.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay, the fruit salad, yummy, yummy, the dudes with the shirts.
Right.
So the Wiggles were playing there that day. So I spent that day during the convention taking my little brother to see the Wiggles in San Antonio. That's my connection to the Spurs in San Antonio outside of the 99 finals. I don't know why I decided this would be the best way to introduce this podcast, but I think it's at least a good icebreaker talk about a 17-56 team that, while the vibes could potentially be down in the dumps, I mean, again, I read all the stats. They're third worst record in the NBA, worst record in the West. And yet it feels like the Wiggles are in town every night because of the hype around Victor Wembanyama and people always tuning in to see what he's doing. Did I describe that right? Does it seem like, from what you get from amongst the fan base or even the organization, the season didn't go great, but there's clearly reason to be excited?
Yeah, I'm going to have to tell these guys in the locker room that this Knicks podcaster explained them or compared them to a Wiggles concert.
Listen, they sell out.
Yeah, right. I mean, and yeah, despite the record, the Spurs are still selling out that arena. I think there were bigger expectations when you talk to players and coaches. They made it pretty clear early on that they were genuinely trying to win this year. I think that maybe they were, and I know that I was to a certain extent, underestimating sort of the difficulty of implementing this high usage 20-year-old super unique type of offensive player into a system who obviously came in immediately and made a big impact defensively. But this was a team that didn't really have like a true focal point last year. You could go back 2 years and say DeJounte Murray was, he was one of these like 30% usage guys. So he was a pretty big focal point, but they move forward and they have to figure out how to play around this guy. And they have the youngest team in the NBA, and not only that, but one thing that I didn't account for is teams would come in and they'd put a target on the Spurs' back because their stars have been hearing about Wembanyama for 2 years now and asking if, like, have you seen this guy play? Is he the real deal? Blah, blah, blah. So, like, a lot of these guys would come in here. Like, I remember a night, whether it's Jokic or Giannis, and they're looking to kill this dude. So, but as the course of the season has gone on, I think the losing has gotten to a lot of fans for sure. There were bigger expectations. I think Vegas at the beginning of the year had them winning like 28 or 29 games, and here they are at 17. So it's been a disappointing season, but people are still showing up in droves to watch Wembanyama. He's incredible to see in person. Like, he's a lot of fun to watch on television, but you don't really get a full scope of everything until you see him in person, and people are still doing that, still very excited with every freaking move he makes. So vibes are still high. I just think that fans are now starting to shift their attention toward, okay, how can we make this team better in the offseason? They're ready to get past these last 9 games.
Well, they have a top 5 pick most likely coming, maybe top 5 right. to 7 pick. There's this potential of also getting the Raptors pick,
right,
which, regardless of how good or bad this draft may be, those are two assets you could potentially use in a move this offseason. I'm going to ask you about that in a second, but you just alluded to things that they figured out throughout the season, that things they may have gotten better with. Now, that may mostly be on the offensive side of the ball, but I mentioned they're 22nd in defensive rating this year. Since the All-Star break, they're 14th. It's like the top half of the league. Now, is that mostly figuring out how best to utilize Wemby? Have they performed better as a team? Is that what you're alluding to, is that they're just a flat out good defensive team since the All-Star break?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was early on in the season, or I guess around the 20 game mark or so, when they made him the starting center rather than playing him next to Zach Collins, I think making him that sort of backstop certainly helped matters. And you can see every team that he plays, I mean, he's putting up these absurd block numbers. I think he was credited with 5 last night, but he had 6. I'm not sure why they took one away. It doesn't matter. But it's like, it's also the shots that guys decide just flatly not to take because he's in the vicinity. He completely changes the dynamics of the defense whenever he's back there. But honestly, man, like, a lot of the defensive improvement has been just like the guys on the perimeter getting their bleep together and like really becoming more organized and on a string. We've seen a lot of improvement even over the course of just this season from Jeremy Sochan as a one-on-one defender, defending all-stars every single night. But honestly, like, and I know that it sounds so basic, but defense is such a good defense is a product of high energy. And it's, and Popovich has talked about it in the past, like, you're not going to see teams' best defensive efforts when they're not competing in games on a regular basis. Like, they kind of lose, the energy is sapped from them. Their focus is sapped. But the Spurs have been playing a lot better. Their net rating has been a lot better. They've been in a lot more, in a lot of close games. And so you see them really locking in and playing defense on the perimeter. And yeah, like I mentioned, the Wembanyama being moved to center, and he is the guy protecting the rim. That's a big part of it, obviously. But secondarily, it's just the guys on the perimeter working and doing the things that their coaching staff has been asking of them for like a year and a half now. So I think it's just a general overall team effort. And when you pair Victor in the back with a guy like Jeremy Sochan, who has become a very good individual defender, when you have that combo on the interior and on the perimeter, it makes a big difference. And it makes a big difference when guys actually try. We'll put it that way.
So then going into this matchup against the Knicks, now the Knicks are coming in riding high, won 7 of their last 8. They, you know, they're shorthanded with no Anunoby and no Julius Randle. I'm just assuming that OG Anunoby's not playing in this game. That is my best guess going into recording this.
That seems pretty fair to say. Yeah.
3:00 Eastern on Thursday. Our guess is that he's coming back on Sunday against the Thunder. And if he doesn't, that's when we'll start to get worried.
Okay.
But being a bit shorthanded at the moment, they've still managed to find ways to put a good team out there. And the last couple games, their offense has just been outstanding. They're hitting a ton of threes. Dante DiVincenzo hit 11 on Monday. Deuce McBride hit 9.
Crazy.
The Knicks had their second best 3-point output as a team in Toronto last night, scoring 145 points in the process. And now they're going to face a much better defensive team. How do you think that the Spurs potentially match up? Like, who are they going to put on Brunson when they're blitzing and doubling Brunson? The Knicks have been really good at getting the ball quickly to Hartenstein and then just taking advantage of a 4-on-3. That's a lot more difficult when Victor Wembanyama's on the back line.
Right.
So, you know, how do you potentially see the Knicks matching up in this game with the Spurs?
Well, Jalen Brunson, man, he's always given the Spurs problems. I'm going to be interested to see what the Spurs do defensively. Like, are they going to put Jeremy Sochan on him early in the game, or are they going to let Trey Jones guard him from the jump and then react accordingly? The Spurs aren't a team that blitzes a ton. They like to play a little bit more conservatively defensively. And they have learned, this was a big problem of theirs for a long time, is when dribble penetration occurred, whether it's out of the pick and roll, isolation, whatever it might be, off of handoffs, they had pretty bad habits in terms of crashing down from the perimeter and leaving shooters. But they've gotten to a point where they're trusting Wembanyama a lot more and thinking to themselves, we don't have to converge on the paint because he's there. So we can trust him to defend the rim. We can stick to our shooters more than we have. So what's going to be interesting to me is going to be who they put on Brunson, because Brunson, whether he was in Dallas or ever since he's been with New York, he's always given them problems. I expect at some point, especially considering the absence of players that you've mentioned, that Jeremy Sochan is going to see, or Brunson is going to see Jeremy Sochan often in this game, so that the Spurs can say, look, we're going to try and just go one-on-one there and make Brunson beat Sochan on a regular basis. Stick to the shooters. We can't let DiVincenzo and Deuce McBride go crazy. We don't have to worry about Julius Randle and his battering ram style of play, like, beat up our smaller lineups. Mitchell Robinson just came back, right?
He did. He only played 12 minutes against the Raptors, and he's now the backup center. But he just come back.
Well, and then, like, Hartenstein, you're just kind of saying to yourself, like, well, we're just going to trust Victor to deal with him, right? So the matchups there, if we're kind of laying it out, it's like, how much do we see Wembanyama just matched up with Hartenstein? I always get it wrong. And then also, how much are we going to see Jeremy Sochan play on defend Jalen Brunson? And is he going to be ready for his craft? Because one of the things with Sohan that we've watched over the last year, almost two seasons now, is the more he encounters guys, the more familiar he gets with them, and he kind of files it away in the Rolodex in his head and say, I can't do this. These are his tendencies. I have to remember these things. He doesn't see Brunson as much as he sees Luka Doncic or LeBron James or SGA or, you know, all the different guys in the Western Conference. So it'll be interesting to see how, whenever Sohan is given that responsibility, how he's able to match up with him and keep him from doing the Jalen Brunson-y stuff that he loves to do.
Would you agree that this feels like a first to 100 game, that these two very good defensive teams, like, I get what the Knicks have been offensively over the last week has been a bit of an anomaly. Their offensive rating was not great. Really, since OG Anunoby and Julius Randle went out, they've had moments. Obviously, they just had a couple of those moments. Tibbs has also made an adjustment. He's gone away from the Precious Achiuwa at the four, starting five, which was elite defensively. But now he's playing much smaller. Josh Hart is a starting four. He's going with a three guard starting lineup, while Anunoby's out with Deuce McBride starting at the two. And the trend since that's happened, really over the last six or so games, is that the Knicks, when they can't score, they're at least able to defend enough that first to 100 wins. They'll hold you under 100 points, that's for sure. But we're just barely going to crack 100. It's honestly, the score I was going to say is 105-93 sounds like a potential. And the reason why I said that, they've won that exact score twice in the last. they beat the Blazers 105-93 and they beat the Nets 105-93. Now, the Nets game that just happened this Saturday is honestly how I'm looking at this upcoming game, because the Nets, that was a 3-point game going into the fourth quarter. And when you're facing a good defensive team, they're 11th in defense since the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's what a Knicks fan should expect in this matchup, that if the Knicks aren't scoring with these, they're not hitting their threes, this could be a close game in the fourth quarter. And then the talent discrepancy might be how the Knicks win this game. Is that a fair projection for how this game might go?
Yeah, I think so. And I do. You've brought up the 3-point line a couple of times. It might come down to the 3-point line in this game. As long as the Spurs can keep their turnovers at least at a reasonable spot, when they shoot well, their defense has been good enough to say, like, hey, we expect to win games when they're in the upper 90s or lower 100s. But I do think that, like, when you look at a lot of the games that the Spurs have been playing recently, and by the way, if you would have said first to 100 wins or posited that at like several months ago, that would have been hilarious. But ever since the renewed focus from the officials that defenses can play a little bit more, that's like an actual realistic thing that you can say is like games in the upper 90s, mid 100s, something like that. So, I think that's probably fair. First one to 100. It's like what's the Lawler's law? The old Clippers announcer, he always said first one to 100 wins the game. Like, that's how he viewed every game. But I think it's fair to say, I don't think that this is going to be, unless the Spurs get hot from three, I don't think that this is going to be, at least on their end, a high scoring game. So I think right in that 100 marker, I think that's going to be where this game will be played, so long as one of these teams doesn't just go crazy from the 3-point line, which who knows?
The Knicks have had a tendency, at least in the last couple games, that's how they've been able to win a margin like that is. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the smaller lineup has helped. There's just more space. There's just more shooting on the floor. Now, Josh Hart doesn't help that, but maybe getting a former Piston or two on the Knicks to potentially play to the value in which they traded for.
Sure.
Listen, I'm taking Tom Thibodeau's lead here and respecting the opponent. I mean, I know what the record is. I also know how good I think Wemby is. I'm respecting the opponent I'm not assuming a Knicks victory. The Knicks absolutely should win this game on Friday night. But we'll see. And like the biggest thing, actually,
have been playing better recently.
They have,
but they're so inconsistent. They've won two in a row. It's the fifth time this year they've won two in a row. They have not won three in a row at any point this season. So if it's right there on the table, but they haven't been able to string more than like two good games together, maybe three, and they go 2-1 or something like that. But consistency has been a big problem with this team all season long.
See, now as a Knicks fan with some PTSD, I don't know if the fact that they haven't won three in a row means, oh, we're right. good. Or like, oh, this is their due to win their third straight. And of course, we're going to be the team that gives them the third straight win.
Right.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about T-Squared Social, your new home for watching Knicks games and the new home of Knicks Film School watch parties. Located at 7 East 42nd Street, just a short walk from Grand Central, T-Squared was founded by Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake. Take it from me, this place has everything for a sports fan. Watch the Knicks or any upcoming local or out-of-market events like the Men's and Women's Final Four or the New York Rangers' final push for the President's Trophy. T-Squared Social is also teaming up with Zog Sports for their new Friday Night Sports League starting April 12th. There are leagues for golf, duck pin bowling, darts, and even cornhole at all skill levels. Join with your friends or...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Join Solo and make new ones. Deadline is April 3rd and use promo code KFS10 to get 10% off when you sign up. Visit tsquaredsocial.com/leagues and kick off your weekend with some friendly competition and catching all the action from your favorite team. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information. Obviously, next season and beyond is the focus for San Antonio. And I know a lot's been discussed, theorized about the best way to build around Wemby going forward. And I know some public things have been said about how this year, how they just built, didn't really build necessarily to win this year around it. I know what the Vegas projection was. And there was also some rumors at the deadline that maybe a reunion with DeJounte Murray was on the table. And like when we had Emmanuel Quickly here in New York, we looked at the Spurs as a potential cap space team that could throw some money at him and take him away. Obviously, in Toronto, I'm pretty sure they're going to do everything to keep his restricted free agency in house. But in your opinion, what's like the biggest need as far as pairing someone with Wemby to make a run? Is it just is it a point guard? Is it just the next, just another talented player to put with him? Where, what direction are you looking?
Yeah, I don't think it's, they need so much. So I don't think that you can just really narrow it down to one specific position. And I also think that there is, I know people talk a lot about, you got to put a good point guard next to Wembanyama, all this stuff. The Trae Young rumors were going crazy for a while and still are. Spurs fans want Trae Young. I don't know about that one, but when you look at what Victor Wembanyama is going to become, when you sort of try to project what his role is going to be, the type of player he's going to be, this is a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. So, and yes, they need to acquire better passing guys who are more capable facilitators, to not just orchestrate an offense with him in mind, but to be able to get the ball to players around him when he commands so much attention. So like, you have to have playmakers. It doesn't, to me at least, doesn't necessarily have to be in the traditional mold of point guard. You just need guys who can get him the ball, get teammates the ball. But to me, more than anything, the Spurs need spacing. They need shooting. They've been a better shooting team since the All-Star break, but just in general, they've been toward the bottom of the league all season long. There are defenses, and I swear to God, I can show you a million different screen grabs or clips where Wembanyama is facing up and trying to drive, and five defenders are in the paint, and there are three shooters just dotting the perimeter waiting for him to pass, and the defense is just being like, we'll take our chances with you guys out there. So to me, more important than anything else, you just have to put guys who are capable of hitting spot up threes, scoring out of the pick and roll, cutting backdoor. You need spacing on this team. You need movement. You just can't let defenses load up against Victor Wembanyama and not pay for it, basically. Like, you have to be able to make them pay for it. And along with that, Victor Wembanyama has to become, and he's going to, we've already seen plenty of evidence that he's got this in his bag, but he's got to become a better passer. He's got to be aware of what defenses want to do to him and with him. And that's just going to come with time. But when you're talking about roster construction and the non-Wembanyama factor in this, you need more shooting. You need more shooting. You need more spacing. That is, I believe, is going to be their number one priority this offseason.
So you hinted at, or you just mentioned that Trae Young is a player that Spurs fans want. Yeah. If you were to also take a, from that poll of feeling the temperature of Spurs fans, who else might be the names that have been mentioned? Because the Knicks have some free agents this offseason. Now, this may be naive of me, but it's also I'm just following trends. Most of their free agents are CAA clients, and I feel comfortable about the Knicks re-signing CAA clients. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
But if you were to say to the Knicks fans listening, whether they should worry about, I don't think Hartenstein has a home in San Antonio because of their commitment to Wemby. And, you know, Ananobi, I'm just trusting that the reason they're bending to his wishes with how long he's taken to come back from this injury is because he knows he's getting a bag this offseason from the New York Knicks. But who are the other names that Spurs fans specifically want?
Yeah, I had someone ask this in a mailbag. Like, they asked, like, you know, should we go after, this is them talking, should we go after OG Anunoby? He's got this player option. And I'm like, look, man, I don't think the Knicks are trading for him. If they don't think that they're going to be bringing him back, paying him a whole bunch of money to stay in New York, I don't think they'd be treating him with kid gloves with this injury right now and being super careful with everything going on if they weren't going to be bringing him back. So I just can't see that being an option. I don't know who else on the team is someone that they would, who would be like available that they'd go after. Like, the one guy, and this is a dude who, for whatever it's worth, and especially considering the sort of, if you want to look at it this way, I don't necessarily look at it this way, but the potential logjam with Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein. Oh, Hartenstein's a free agent, huh? Zach Collins has disappointed. Charles Bassey is off injured, and is are you concerned about that? He has a partially guaranteed contract basically all the way through. But frankly, like, with Collins' extension about to kick in, I don't think that teams are going to be, especially considering the year that he's had, which has been really rough. I don't think teams are going to be going after a guy who's like him, who's about to start making $17 million a year. I look at the Knicks roster and I don't really see someone that San Antonio is going to go chasing down. Like, I really do. If the Spurs wanted to move on to a different big man situation. And to your point, it's an interesting one. Like, I don't know exactly what they're going to want to do with Wembanyama long term, but the move to center and to the five with space around him really does seem like it's going to be the thing moving forward. It helped with their spacing and their pace and all this other stuff. So are you going to go out and pay a guy who's earned himself in Hartenstein, who's earned himself a bag of his own? Like, he's played really well this season. Are you going to go out and pay that guy to be a backup? I look at the Knicks roster. I'm like, I don't think the Spurs are going to be going after or chasing down many dudes on the many Knicks, if any. So I don't think that it's necessarily a target zone for them unless they really do want to try to move on from their backup big situation and they don't mind, you know, pursuing a guy like Hartenstein, who, like I said, is going to get paid himself.
I go back and forth on whether, look, we had Bobby Marks on the show around the deadline, and he projected that Hartenstein would go back to the Knicks because of the fact that he'd be probably looked at as a backup. And if you're looking at him as a starter, then the Knicks can just like make him the starting center and have him and Mitchell Robinson split time and have that be an elite combo. And like, there's just not a lot of teams. Like the thought was that maybe the Pistons could be a team, but they're committed to Durin. The Raptors might be a team, ironically, after the trades that the Knicks have made with them.
Right.
But they just extended Kelly Olynyk. So the thought might be that if he, again, CAA client, that he just stays in house. What about outside of the Knicks roster? Where else are outside of Atlanta, I should say, where else are Spurs fans looking?
So they've been so focused on the Trae Young thing. It's been crazy. It's almost been like shielding really? Other. The thing that I've been looking at when it comes to building a roster and bringing in other high caliber players that might not necessarily be like the superstar type. But you look at teams that are going to be either in need of draft capital if they're trying to start over, or a team that's about to face a giant, you know, tax bill, something like that. So, and I'm just throwing these kind of out there, but I look at the Brooklyn Nets and I say, if I'm the Spurs, like, are you guys sure you're going to move forward with Mikal Bridges as your number one guy? You don't have any picks. Like you owe them all over the place. The Suns picks don't kick in for a little while, and they're probably not going to be good unless that whole thing just falls apart at some point. But like, if you want to get this show on the road, like you need assets right now. Well, the Spurs have a bunch of trade assets. They have their own this year, potentially Toronto's. If Toronto's doesn't convey this year, it's top six protected. It's top six protected also for 2025 and 2026. They have Chicago's number one pick, top 10 protected starting next year, and then top eight protected 2 years after that. They have Atlanta's unprotected 2025, unprotected swap 2026, unprotected 2027. They have Charlotte's pick, lottery protected. It's not going to convey this year, obviously, but next year. So like they have a whole bunch of picks going all the way out to 2030 that they can offer teams if they want to, if you're talking about a Nets team that might want to start over. Doesn't sound like they did. Like there were reports at the trade deadline that the Rockets were talking about a Jalen Green for Mikal Bridges offer, and the Nets said no. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funky looking right now because Jalen Green is really going crazy. But you know, I guess it would depend on how they view Mikal Bridges. And I know that every team, well, it's just been two teams so far, but they love the guy. But he seems like the perfect Spur to me. He seems like exactly the kind of guy that they would go after. And then just another random example is like Minnesota is about to owe a whole bunch of money. Do you go look at like a Naz Reid or someone like that who they obviously just paid, but I don't think they're going to be pursuing Karl Anthony Towns. So it's those kind of teams that I think the Spurs might be looking at if they are interested in bringing in another high caliber player who sort of fits, who's young enough, to not be a concern that he's going to be over the hill anytime soon, but not too young where he's still developing. You want to put a proven player next to Wembanyama pretty much right now, because he's not far off from being ready to contend. I'd give it like two more years. He's got a lot of growing to do still, but the rate at which he is growing as a player is insane to watch. So this show needs to get on the road quickly. And that was the Spurs' whole thing. When I talked to people in the organization last summer, they said, we're going to chill. We're going to see how he works, how he operates. We're going to work with his body, see what he's capable of on the floor, see where his spots are on the floor, like how we want to use him as an offensive hub. And then from there, starting next summer, then it's all aboard and we're going to figure this thing out. So I do think it's going to be an eventful summer for the Spurs. But yeah, that I know that there had been sort of a lot of national skepticism and wondering about what the hell they were doing and not bringing in more talent around him in year one. Well, they didn't want to act before they knew exactly what they have, and they know what they have now.
Yeah, everyone knows what they have now. What they have now. And look, just from my perspective outside looking in, we did a Patreon ranking. I believe it was 2 weeks ago. I think it was who the top five trade assets were in the league. And it's really like, if you're saying the Spurs would turn down a call from the Nuggets for Jokic one for one, then it's Wemby's number one. Like it's literally him or Jokic. And look, I think that's a fun conversation as far as like trade value rankings is concerned. I think that's where I would also echo your sentiments that if the Spurs are looking to speed the process up and go all in next year, I don't put it past Wemby to just, oh, suddenly they're a play-in team. Suddenly they're playing for an 8th seed. And that's how good I think he could be in this league, especially with some of the older teams, like just flat out the old guard is starting to disappear with the Warriors potentially. I mean, this Rockets run has just been unreal to watch and how they're putting pressure on the Warriors for that 10 spot. But we'll see. Now, that was my outsider perspective on the Spurs. I want to get your outsider perspective on the Knicks. Now, they've had an interesting season, a big trade on right before New Year's for Anunoby. I've heard the projections from a lot of people that come on this show and say Eastern Conference Finals. I also know my deepest, darkest fears of a first round playoff loss. In your honest assessment, how do you view the Knicks and what they've done so far this year?
It's so hard to try to visualize the final product because I feel like we just haven't seen it. Like Randall's been hurt for so long. Robinson's been hurt for so long. Anunoby came in right away and it's like, yeah, this is why you trade for this guy. But he's been hurt, you know, these long stretches now. So I don't know. But in theory, when you see the guys that they've brought in and the fact that they're all like, it's all the way they all complement each other is so perfect. And it's so perfect for like Tibbs ball. Like everything just seems to click and work the right way that I could see a scenario where they could get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I can't do that right now because of all these injuries. And even considering how well they've played and sort of weathered the storm with all the guys they've been missing, it's been incredibly impressive. I'm sort of at this crossroads right now where like I think that they have this style of play that could give the Bucks trouble, the Celtics trouble, like really muck things up for those teams. But like, I can't go that far yet until I know what this, because as presently constituted, I can't put them over those two teams. But like, if they do come back healthy and all these pieces are clicking together, they have enough of a nasty side and a defensive presence to be able to slow a lot of what those two teams like to do, to slow them down. And then just the way Brunson is playing is incredible. I will fully admit when he signed in New York, I was like, I mean, it's not like too much money, but I just don't believe Brunson is that guy. Like the leader of a team, like I can see him being a number two or a number three, or like he was perfect as a bench guy in Dallas. He's blown that stuff out of the water. He's incredible to watch. Awesome leader. It's just been a very cool story. I have a lot of friends who are Mavs fans that just hate just the sight of him and what their team allowed to happen. But yeah, I can't at this point until I see it. I can put them in that 3-4 range, but I can't see them overcoming a Bucks or Celtics team unless I know exactly what we're looking at from the Knicks side of things from a health perspective.
No offense taken, I promise. I think that's how a lot of us have been hedging our own projections going forward. It's that there's this team that was 12-2 with the best net rating in the sport when Anunoby got traded here. And then there's this team since then. It's why this weird year where it's been like three seasons. There's the pre-trade. There's that month of January. Yeah, sure. And then there's since then. It's like, oh, there's a potential for a really fun playoffs if we can get healthy. But the uncertainty with Randall. And at this point, if he doesn't play Sunday, the uncertainty with Anunoby.
Yeah.
We'll start to kick in. Mm-hmm. I think the most impressive part, and this, I mean, not to wax poetic about Tom Thibodeau, because I think it's been a group effort, but like they were the four seed when the injuries happened, because Anunoby and Randall went out the same day in January, and they're the three seed now. Like they've actually improved in the standings.
Yeah, it's been incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like over 500 since that point. They're about like Anunoby came back for three games. They won all three. And they're, I believe, one game over 500 without Anunoby since the trade. So there's a little, I mean, he's obviously created this weird curve where like anytime we talk about the potential Spurs matchup, or not the Spurs matchup, the Bucks matchup or the Celtics matchup, I turn into Iron Man in the first Avengers movie where it's like, well, they have Tatum and they have Brown, or they have Giannis and Dame's, like, well, we have a Hulk. And his name is OG Anunoby. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, like I'm always going to turn to that, because every single time, like the two losses that they have, they're like a rebound that they didn't get away from winning two very close games. So, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Last thing before I let you get out of here, I ask every guest this before they go. It's a Mount Rushmore of rivals. Now, as a bit of a Spurs historian, I don't know, did you grow up a Spurs fan?
Yeah, actually I did. I grew up a Spurs fan. I'm from the area, and then I went to journalism school and learned about objectivity and then started
and
covering
it sucked this right community. Out of you. Yep.
And I'll tell you where it really like left my soul was I covered both of the Spurs Heat finals, and I was in Miami for the Ray Allen shot. And then obviously the game 7 after that. And I had to write after all that stuff. And that was when I was just like, oh, it's gone. this just ripped it all out of me. I'm a stone-hearted individual now. So yeah, but I did grow up a Spurs fan. I did.
So then in your opinion, who are the four teams, or what are the four teams that would be the Mount Rushmore of rivals? Obviously, there's the four teams whose dates you circle on the calendar before the season. Knicks, obviously, we have a couple that are mostly here in the Northeast, but then I go down to South Beach, and the Heat are obviously one of them. There's some.
That's a huge Knicks, one. Yeah.
Honestly, there was a stretch in the early 2000s where I looked forward to a rematch, the 99 finals, when I could, even though there really wasn't much of a match. No. You tell me who the Mount Rushmore of Spurs rivals are.
It would have to be, there are three obvious ones to me, at least. That would be the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets, and then the Los Angeles Lakers. I feel like there would be a debate with this one. Some fans would say the Phoenix Suns, because of those, you know, D'Antoni Suns against Pop Spurs matchups in the, you know, mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. And then but the other one would be Oklahoma City. I think that one's an interesting one, because there was history between them prior to You know, when they went to the finals for the, well, they only went to the finals once. When they went to the finals, the Durant, Harden, Westbrook Thunder, they beat the Spurs in 2012. And then the next year, the Spurs beat them in the Western Conference Finals and went to the finals to go on and play the Heat. It was, well, it was either 2013 or 14 that they beat the Thunder. I can't, anyway.
It was 14 because they won it. That was the year Durant won MVP, but the Spurs won 60 games and then won that game six in overtime. Yeah.
Right. The year before they beat Memphis in the Western Conference Finals. So
that was the Mr. Unreliable year, if you remember OKC, because Westbrook got hurt and then.
That's right.
Oklahoman decided to plant the first seed of Kevin Durant eventually leaving Oklahoma City.
That's true. So that, I mean, Oklahoma City was absolutely a rival at that point of the Spurs. And it was this sort of blossoming one with this young upstart team against this veteran experienced Spurs team and within close proximity of one another. And now, like when you sort of project forward, these are the two youngest teams in the NBA. And the Chet versus Wemby thing is already real. The Thunder are modeled after the Spurs. Sam Presti comes from San Antonio. So there are all these connection points. They have a history. I would argue it's the Thunder, but I know that a lot of old school Spurs fans would probably say the Suns. My mind though, like if I'm putting money on it, if I want to watch these four teams play the Spurs, it's Mavs, it's Rockets, it's Lakers, and it's Oklahoma City to me.
I'm a bit surprised that, and maybe you could add more context to this, that the Warriors didn't even get brought up as a mention, because there's that specifically that 2017 season where, you know, Kawhi's ankle gets injured and they were up by a ton in that game.
I think Spurs fans just hate Zaza Pachulia.
So it's a Zaza. So it's the three teams you mentioned and then Zaza's face.
That's right. It's Zaza. Yeah. And, you know, I think, who knows? Like, I feel like we were just as a basketball viewing community. Like, I think that the NBA community was robbed of like a potential all time series there, because I'm telling you, and you never really heard the Spurs sort of talk a whole lot of crap, even behind the scenes. But like that team felt they had a blueprint to slow down that Warriors team. And for more than a half, it was like, oh crap, they're up 24 on this team in the third quarter. Like they might actually have something here, but Kawhi rolls the ankle. It's over. We all know what happened from there, but no, I don't, you know, I just, the Spurs and the Warriors there weren't enough consistent meetups like with both of those teams in their prime to really match up with with the history of those other matchups. It was always a very exciting thing for, at least, especially for those that stretch in the mid 2000s in the teens. But I would not put the Warriors as high as I would the other ones. There's a lot of history with those other teams.
Well, to your point about OKC, like you might have been able to get another Warriors matchup in 2016 when, what I remember from most of that season was that the Warriors were on pace for 70 wins and so were the Spurs. Like these two teams were neck and neck for most of the year. The Warriors started to put some distance because the Spurs, like a normal team, started to lose like, right, every now and like it just wasn't there. Okay, they'll win 67 games this year instead. And then, you know, I thought we were headed for a collision course of Spurs Warriors in the conference finals, but OKC pulls off the upset after losing both game one and game two. They win the next four in that conference semis in 2016. So interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And that Spurs team, like and the one, both of those Spurs teams, the one that lost to the Thunder, the one that lost to the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, like those teams were so good. They were just there, and especially on the defensive side of the ball. And that was like when Kawhi was really trying on that side of the ball. But their defensive ratings those 2 years were like 95, something like that. I mean, it was crazy. They were such good teams. I think one of those teams was a 62 win team, something like that. But yeah, it could have been more. You're right. It could have been more.
Yeah, I'm staring at it now because we looked up the best net ratings of all time because that's what the Celtics are competing for at the moment. And the Spurs had a better net rating in 2016 than the 73-9 Warriors.
Yeah.
So there is there's that very good team that, you know, we were really robbed of potentially them playing against the Warriors in either of those years. Matt, thank you so much for joining me for this edition of the Pregame Pod. I'd like meeting new people in the industry that are
really great.
Fun to talk to about the specific teams that I am not an expert on that the Knicks are about to play. We'll see how this matchup goes on Friday night. But before you get out of here, please let the fine folks at home know where they can find you and all the things that you do.
Yeah, you can find my, and I appreciate it, by the way. I've enjoyed this conversation. But yeah, you can find my stuff on Substack, matthewtynan.substack.com. It's the corporate knowledge newsletter. And then you can find my podcast, Small Market Bias, pretty much anywhere. So yeah, that's where you can find my stuff.
There you go. You can, as he just mentioned, the link to his Substack will be in the video description as well as the podcast description. So please like, subscribe. You know what to do. Support the people that make time for us. Thank you to Matt for joining me. And thank you to all of you for joining me for another edition of the Knicks Film School Pregame Pod. If you dig this episode, please head over to iTunes, drop a 5-star rating and a review. If you're watching on YouTube, please remember to like the video and subscribe. I will be back Easter Sunday morning with a new episode. So to preview the Knicks matchup, that primetime matchup against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Dear God, literally, I hope Ananobi rises from the grave on that day. My dad's going to be very upset that I made that reference, but I will apologize later. Until next time, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Enjoy the game tonight, and I will speak with you soon. Peace.